Greetings, pals. It's me, D. Trussell, and you're listening to the Doug Trussell Family Hour podcast, and I'm recording this from New York City. I'm in the Big Apple. I'm looking out right now at the Statue of Liberty. I could see her upstretched arm through a pretty thick veil of sweet New York fog and New York rain. Now, when I lived in New York City, I would probably consider this to be a shitty day. But having been in the strange utopian weather systems of Los Angeles, blue skies pretty much all the time, no rain ever, this is absolute paradise. And anytime I come here, I always get wrenched in the heart because a part of me thinks, man, are you really going to raise your son in a place where you have to point when the wind blows? Because that's kind of unique. I mean, we get the Santa Ana winds. I get it. But no thunderstorms, no rain. If you do get a thunderstorm, it scares the almighty shit out of you. You think it's some pre-earthquake that's happening or some military testing site has detonated a new experimental weapon. You never go right to the fact that, oh, it's a thunderstorm, which is one of the things that you get to enjoy when you live in a place that isn't a desert, which is what technically LA is. Also, I'm not bitching about it. I love LA, and anytime I come back there, I'm always happy to be there. And God forgive me for even tiptoeing around the most embarrassing, boring exploration a person can have, the difference between New York and LA. To quote Gautama Buddha, some people will tell you this place is better than that place, but I say unto thee, the whole world is on fire. Regardless, I like some weather, I like some rain, and I love being here in New York because New York is an occult city. It really is. You could just feel the weird mystical vibes here. This place is dense, tight. This part of the human hive is so incredibly focused, and the people here are all little disciplined wizards or apprentices of wizards or sorceresses. You can just see it in their eyes. Everybody's so fucking focused. You don't get what you get in other parts of the world where you get just the sense that people as they walk around are kind of like lazing about, just enjoying a nice, you know, easy stroll through this place or that place. Here, man, this part of the hive is like Africanized bee people. Like, these people are going for it. They've all got plans, big plans. This place, no doubt, is filled with a variety of mystery schools and secret cobbles and wizards. Historically, this has definitely been the case, and certainly right now, I have no doubt about it. Which brings us to something I wanted to introduce to you. I was revisiting one of my favorite, well, my only, to be honest, Aleister Crowley book, which is Liber 4. You can get that on Amazon. It's just called Liber 4. It's really cool. It's got a really psychedelic looking cover, and it's a beautiful series of essays. Apparently, it's a like a compilation of a lot of different of Crowley's works, and it's designed for someone who is a novice. But when Crowley says novice, that doesn't mean like normal novice. It's still insanely dense. It's written in a kind of like, I don't know. Crowley had this specific, delightful pomposity to the way that he wrote. And it sounds exactly like the way you would expect a sorcerer to write. It's a fantastic book. Lots of essays. It's got the famously controversial essay that Crowley wrote called, I think it's like On the Bloody Ritual or something like that, which is just an in-depth assessment of human sacrifice through the ages. It sounds way more sinister than it is because he sort of breaks down how in so many different mythologies you get human sacrifice. But that's just one weird chapter in the book. There's a lot of other stuff in there. A wonderful introduction to yoga in the very beginning. And of course, there are the sort of basics of ceremonial magic. So if you're drawn to that sort of thing and you want to dive in, or you just want to have a cool book laying around that makes you look like you're Gandalf, Liber 4. Now, in the book, he mentions something called the Argentum Astrum. Now, I've talked about this before. I speculate about it all the time, especially when I'm feeling particularly dismal about the world. And the speculation goes something like this. For anything that exists, there's got to be its opposite, right? A thing can't be without its opposite. For every light, there's going to be some kind of shadow. This, I think, must have something to do with the duality. And I don't know. I'm sure there's some like deep philosophical way of describing what I'm talking about. But in my basic brutish way of thinking about shit, for everything, there's probably an opposite. And so for me, that means that here's a sort of boring, not quite boring, but kind of boring example. We've got weapons manufacturers. That's not a conspiracy theory. That's not woo-woo at all. Without doubt, in this world, there are groups of people at this very moment gathered together, assembling weapons that they're going to sell to different countries and never really ask, what are you going to use these for? What's your intention with these weapons? What are you going to do with this cluster bomb? What are you going to do with this Black Hawk helicopter? What's your plan with the chain gun that I'm selling you? They don't ask that. They just sell weapons to whoever. And then these weapons, of course, get used to blow up people. And of those people that get blown up, inevitably, there's civilians. Quite often, more civilians get blown up than whoever was intended to be killed. By the way, everyone starts off a civilian, right? I mean, these are just like babies who got like in camo, essentially. The point is, we know that for sure there's weapons manufacturers. We've got Raytheon. It's out there. We've got Halliburton. We've got people who in the middle of the night wake up and think to themselves, holy shit, I think I just came up with a better cluster bomb than the one that we're currently using. There's people who probably wake up and are like, fuck, if I like inject this particular DNA into that virus, I think we're going to have a bioweapon that only kills people of this ethnicity or that ethnicity or only kills people for this amount of time. Or I could invent a vaccine for it and wait to use the vaccine until a certain amount of people are wiped out. And then they go and pitch it the way people in LA pitch movies. You know, and then if they're lucky, they get a deal and they sell it. And then the next thing you know, some new bioweapon exists. Now, I hope that isn't happening, but it definitely happened with smallpox. People actually spent millions and millions of dollars researching ways to weaponize smallpox. If you want to get hyper creeped out, check out the excellent book, Demon in the Freezer. It's an incredible fucking book about, you know, smallpox and how they actually like used pigs to make it increasingly virulent, and then they figured out how to aerosolize it, and then a whole like shit ton of smallpox went missing, you know, even though apparently there's only like a few samples of smallpox left in the world, thank God, because it's a horrific, deadly disease. Anywho, not trying to make y'all paranoid about smallpox at all, but my point is, we know in the world there are groups of people who publicly work on machines of death so that they can make money, and they're able to do that legally under the banner of the military-industrial complex. Now, that there's got to be an opposite of that, and of course there is. We've got all the varieties of charities out there. People like Doctors Without Borders, the Red Cross, and all the charities we probably will never even hear about, just the little community charities that appear in churches, temples, synagogues, mosques, any place where people are attempting to gain some theophany and translate that divine connection into action. And usually that action looks like some kind of healing, some kind of community service, some kind of offering of food, some kind of donation, some kind of creating a place where people who don't have a place to live can live. So we know that that exists. It's not mysterious at all. They're out there right now. There's people from Doctors Without Borders literally give up their lives to go to places and give people medical care who otherwise wouldn't have access to it. So we know in the overt that we've got the military-industrial complex, and then as its opposite, we've got things like Doctors Without Borders, and these things operate completely in the public eye. Now, my sweet, sweet darlings, here's a mystical little tidbit for you. Crowley talks about or created or channeled the knowledge of a particular organization called the AA. This is the Argentum Astrum. Now, like most things, I only, you know, I just do the surface level stuff, which is why I'm eternally and perpetually a fool. But hopefully when I tell you about stuff like this, it piques your curiosity and you go and investigate it on your own. But I'm just gonna, so God forgive me here, I don't have Liber 4 with me. The damn thing weighs like 8 pounds. I'm not gonna carry it on the airplane to New York. I'm not that cool. But here's the Wikipedia description of the AA, the Argentum Astrum. The AA is a spiritual organization described in 1907 by occultist Aleister Crowley. Its members are dedicated to the advancement of humanity by perfection of the individual on every plane through a graded series of universal initiations. Its initiations are syncretic, unifying the essence of Theravada Buddhism with Vedantic yoga and ceremonial magic. The AA applies what it describes as mystical and magical methods of spiritual attainment under the structure of the Kabbalistic Tree of Life and aims to research, practice, and teach scientific illuminism. Now, look it up. It is so amazingly trippy. Argentum Astrum, it might mean silver star. There's a lot of different descriptions of what the name means. Does it mean Atlantean adepts? I'm just on Wikipedia, gang. I don't know. I certainly don't speak Latin, Greek, Aramaic, and I don't know the language of Atlantis. But okay, listen to this. Members of the First Order of AA, the Golden Dawn, and Dominus Liminus are sworn to openly declare everywhere their connection with AA. Adepts, however, are expected to work in silence, whereas Magi are required to declare their law, the Ipsissimi, who existeth without form. The highest initiates manifest on this plane and are sworn to silence as to their attainment to this degree. So it's not, it's like it starts off as a non-secret society, and then the deeper you get into it, the more it becomes a secret society where you don't even talk about it at all. Now listen to this. This is where it gets really trippy. Members officially only know those directly above and below in the chain of instruction. Members are expected to work alone, consulting as needed with their superior in the order. In this way, the founders of the system hope to avoid the many political problems that allegedly brought about the downfall of the predecessor organization, the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. The AA is an organization focused on enlightenment of the individual, with a strong emphasis on maintaining the chain of initiation from teacher to student and devoting all of one's attainments to those individuals below them. So anyway, wow, what a weird concept. It's so trippy and weird to imagine this organization where you only know your teacher and who you're teaching. That's it. You don't know the great chain of the organization, how far it stretches out. And certainly any given day, you might be running into an adept in this particular organization who's not going to tell you because they're sworn to secrecy. But what we do know about the thing is that it's dedicated to the advancement of humanity by perfection of the individual on every plane. So essentially, it's a good thing out there, but it's secret. So in the same way we've got churches and mosques and temples and Doctors Without Borders and right out there in the open doing good work, we have organizations like the AA, which are kind of in the open, but kind of super secret. In fact, it could be that you're already being taught by your teacher in this organization, and you just haven't quite woken up to the name of the thing, and they might not ever tell you that the name of the thing is the AA. But of course, here it says you're supposed to declare it everywhere. Listen, I don't know. I've never met a single person who announced that they were in the AA. I know a lot of people in AA, but I don't know a lot of people in the AA. Not to say that people in AA aren't in the Argentum Astrum. I have no idea how that works. Regardless, here's a fun thing to think about the next time you're walking around, because this particular mystical organization, which is to me something. I'm always fascinated by this, mystery schools, right? Like, we know there's like, generally, mystery schools get portrayed in cinema in the negative, like Rosemary's Baby, you know, like secret cobbles of Satanists trying to bring the Antichrist to life and like doing horrific things, controlling people in power secretly, all that shit. That's, you know, people, that's Hereditary, you know, that's not Hereditary as in like DNA, but the movie Hereditary with the covens of witches trying to summon the demon. But, and that would be the military industrial complex occult version of what we're talking about here. But also, there's going to be the opposite of that, which is these secret groups of mystical workers out there who are actively engaged in trying to upshift the consciousness of the entire planet, and they're doing it on the individual level. They're working with people around them, either like allowing them to know that, oh yeah, you know, I'm a member of this group and the group exists on every plane of reality. In this particular plane of reality, it's called the Argentum Astrum, but in other planes of reality, it's got varieties of names. Or they're just like hanging out with people and listening to them because they know these are people who nobody listens to and feel incredibly lonely. And they know that just by like expressing love or creating a space of love, they're going to like upshift that person's consciousness, not through their own effort, but just by giving a space within which for once the person is being heard. So it's pretty exciting to imagine there might actually be people in your life right now who are part of groups like the Argentum Astrum and who are working with you, actively working with you via some form of selfless love or service or sweetness. And the other fun thing to think about is they're not in a hurry because it exists on every single plane of reality, meaning that the human plane, the dense plane, the bardo of becoming, as it's sometimes called in Buddhism, that's just like one little sliver or slice of what's going down in this particular infinite thingamajig we call a universe, meaning that you, on this level, you're seeing yourself as a human. You look in the mirror, you've got a beard. If you're me, you see like insanely beautiful abdominal muscles and like a phoenix tattoo that's smoking a bong. But phoenix smoking a bong on your arms and on your abs, just got that fresh ass tattoo. It looks so good. Taking a big fucking hit and it says born again through fire underneath it. But I don't know what you see when you look in the mirror. Regardless, the idea is that that's just one little part of what you are. There could be a part of you right now in some hyperdimensional DMT style grove sitting down with your actual guardian angel who is talking to you and teaching you and giving you instructions on how to be non-attached, how to be compassionate, how to give more, how to love more. And on this plane of reality, that shit's coming to you by stuff that you're noticing in movies, you know, or stuff that are like just randomly picking up a book and opening it to a page which happens to be about compassion, or running into someone on the street and ending up in some weird conversation with them where they tell you exactly the thing that you were needing to hear. That's how it looks like here on the in the Bardo of Becoming. Here, our teachers teach us through coincidence and synchronicities. That's one of the main ways. That's when I really start listening. There, on the higher planes, they might just be saying it outright to our astral light bodies. Now, again, this is hyper speculation on my part. Unfortunately, as far as I'm aware, I am not a member of the Argentum Astrum, though I would certainly enjoy bugling out that I was. And you know that if I was, I wouldn't stop talking about it. And that maybe that's the problem, is because once I got to some certain level of it where you're supposed to shut the fuck up, I wouldn't be able to. I'd want to go, oh my God, I've figured out how to levitate wine glasses. So maybe for this particular incarnation, I won't get to be in the Argentum Astrum. Regardless, check it out. Look it up. It's so cool and weird and fun to imagine. And even if it is just hogwash invented by lunatics, if you want to have a great day and you're bored, or you feel a little anxious or stressed out or crushed by the horrific, dark, capitalist of the world, then it's fun to like, as an exercise, just imagine, wait, I'm not being crushed. I'm being taught. I'm not being broken down. I'm being initiated. I'm not being starved out. This is like in a Shaolin temple where they like put scorpions on your nipple and spank you with snakes. And yeah, it sucks. But like after 7 days of that, you learn how to walk on water. Maybe that's what's actually happening with your shitty job, your weird relationship, the disease, the ailment, the loss, the gain. It's all just snakes slapping your ass via whatever the particular modality of suffering you're most tuned into right now. And eventually you'll realize, eventually you'll come to on the astral plane. And you'll say to your guardian angel, I just want to thank you for putting those scorpions on my nipples and for spanking my ass with the anaconda. And even though on the human plane of reality, that looked like a shitty fucking job that I had a 2-hour commute to get to and a disintegrating relationship or the loss of my beloved pets in a horrific dog walking /train/blimp accident, it really taught me about impermanence, and it never would have happened if you hadn't been really, really putting those hyperdimensional scorpions on my astral nipples.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water, but you're getting it anyway, because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles, Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
Friends, we have got so much coming up. There's a big tour that's going to happen soon. Not to mention that at some point in some mysterious amount of time, you're going to be able to watch on Netflix the animated series that I did with Pendleton Ward called Midnight Gospel. And we've got much more than that right around the corner. If you want to dive deeper into the DTFH, won't you do me a huge favor and subscribe to us over at patreon.com/DTFH. You will get commercial-free episodes of this podcast along with at least one extra hour-long rambling rant thing every single month. We also have a shop, which has got t-shirts and posters in it. And if you want to support this podcast, one of the best ways to do it is to try out the ads that are taking the risk of putting their brands on the Doug and Trussell Family Hour podcast. Order some books. Sign up for Squarespace. All right, let's jump into this episode. What I love about the Comedy Store is you get to meet people who are the funniest people you ever met in your life. And we talk about the story of me meeting today's guest, David Lucas, later on in the podcast. But I crossed paths with this young comic. Saw him on stage. He was so funny, like alien level funny. Like, whoa, this guy must be from, like, I don't know, another star system. He was on this show that Tony Hinchcliffe does called Kill Tony, which you should go see sometime. And I watched him being completely in the moment and just thought, wow, that is a really funny dude. We got to be friends. I did his awesome podcast. He agreed to do mine. And so that's what today's episode is. It's a conversation with a relatively new comic to the Comedy Store. When I say relatively new, he's been there for a while, but still in Comedy Store years, not that long at all. He's a really funny, really deep, really spiritual guy. And you should definitely check out his podcast, Brothers in Cursive, which I don't know if you'd necessarily label it a spirituality podcast, but it's like an old school, hilarious, funny, ridiculous podcast. And you should check it out for sure. I did an episode and I haven't laughed that hard in a long time. All the links you need to find David are going to be at DuncanTrussell.com. Now, everybody, please rip open your astral chest cavities and let some of that mystery school glory light go spraying through the pulsating tubules that connect all sentient entities in the universe to each other, and spray that sweet, sweet Illuminati love all over David Lucas. David, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Absolutely.
It is so cool to get a chance to talk to you. I did your podcast last week.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun, man.
Had a blast. You have an old school podcast, which is amazing.
What do you mean old school?
Old school, like in the, like when Rogan started doing it, it was just like sitting around just
shooting
bullshit.
The shit. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nothing important.
Nope.
There's just, and if something important came up, it was cool.
Yeah.
But there wasn't an, like any kind of sense of like, shit, this is important. Those are the old days, man. Like now, if you go on Rogan, you're shitting bricks. You know, it's like 70 trillion people watch it. Bernie Sanders was on the show. People
Damn.
Are on the,
like, and he had Snowden.
Yeah, he had Snowden. He had Lazar, the UFO dude, man. And it's like, if UFOs are going to be announced, it'll probably happen through his podcast,
right.
Probably, right? So it's, but your podcast, what I love about it is it's hilarious.
Thanks,
but
man.
It's just that basic, like just having just fun with friends.
Come in there and have fun, man. Nothing. Only serious thing that came up last week was has the government been feeding us sweet limes instead of lemons?
Yeah, that's right. We were cracking the code because you thought limes were baby lemons.
They are. We've been eating sweet limes this whole time.
It falls in with the conspiracy theory that birds are actually cameras, that people are saying that, like, there hasn't been a living bird on the planet in a decade. It's all cameras. It's all surveillance devices. They charge on telephone wires.
I like that.
I do too.
I like it.
You like conspiracy theories?
I do.
What's your, if you have to pick like the one that's most likely to be true?
Tupac living in Cuba.
Oh really? You think he faked his own death?
It sounds feasible.
I don't know anything about that one. I thought that the conspiracy was he was like assassinated by the government, not that he relocated.
So apparently this thing started when he died because, what was it? He named one of his albums Machiavelli. And what was it? Machiavelli like faked his own death and then came back 7 years later.
Wow.
So I remember when I was like in elementary school, everybody was talking like, Tupac's going to come back this year. I think it was like 2003.
Oh, shit.
Like, Tupac's going to come back this year, man.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he did have a lot going on. You know, he pissed a lot of people off and he wasn't really that guy. A lot of people think Tupac was a gangster, but Tupac was an artist.
Right.
He went to performing arts school.
Like, yeah.
I don't think there was really a gangster bone in his body. Probably when he got with Death Row is, you know, when he started, you know, you start hanging around certain people and you kind of pick up their attributes.
Sure.
So that's probably when he started, you know, acting more gangster. Like, he was a real actor.
Yeah.
Who was, Jada Pinkett's love interest.
Wow.
And Will Smith actually talked about that recently, that he didn't ever feel like he could live up to be what Tupac meant to Jada. It was kind of crazy.
Whoa, that's fucked up. Well, how are you going to do that? What are you going to do? Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
Being with somebody that was getting,
right,
hooking up with fucking Tupac?
Right.
What are you going to do? I would just apologize every morning.
You got to.
Well,
you got to. You got to be a perfect person.
I'm sorry. I just wake up. I don't know. I don't know why you did it. It's
perfect
your fault.
Person, yeah.
But with Tupac, the conspiracy theory I've heard.
His aunt lives in Cuba. She's never been found because, you know, his mom was like a very strong Black Panther that I believe got arrested with some powerful guy. And also his aunt was involved in this. I think they had like, they've been charged like an assassination attempt or an actual assassination. Then she fled to Cuba, never to be heard from.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So there's like a precedent there,
right,
for him. But the reason he fled is because he felt like he was in danger. He just felt like he had made too many enemies, had to reinvent himself somewhere.
I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt if Epstein is somewhere chilling.
That's one of the, to me, if you're going to follow the trail of logic with Epstein, it's more likely that he's still alive than it is he killed himself. If the idea is he's got a reservoir of the most powerful people on earth, of films of them banging kids. If that's on record, then there's no fucking way that he didn't have a kill switch that was going to release the stuff if anything ever happened to him.
Exactly.
Which means that he is probably still alive.
I mean, like, my granddaddy, growing up young, I won't say, you know, he's old, he's very old, he's in his 80s, but I won't say that he was like a conspiracy theorist, but he always said, if you see it in the movies, best believe they're already doing it. And what's that one movie with, what's his name? The guy with the eye, Forrest Whitaker, and the president was in it, and they were like in Spain. And they used a body double for the president, but then they actually like kidnapped the real president.
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. I know. I haven't seen that movie, but I do know what you're talking about. This is another. This is essentially another conspiracy theory.
Well, I'm just saying, like, they're already showing you body double, so you don't think they can show us a body double of Epstein?
Well, or like, you know, I don't know if you watch like some reporters or famous people, like they'll show videos of them and all of a sudden they just kind of like shut down. Have you ever seen that shit? Like there's a whole montage on YouTube.
You have to send me that. I love reporters. To watch it.
They like, they're just talking and all of a sudden they're like a malfunctioning droid.
Right.
There, I can't remember the sports announcer, but there's a video of him and it looks like he just stops working for a second. And so this is a whole, like, terrifyingly ridiculous theory that what's happening is if you get famous enough, they kill you and replace you with a clone that's controlled by the powers that be, because the last thing you want is a charismatic, kind person who can distract the herd into changing the way that they're currently living.
Right.
So that's the theory I heard about Tupac, was like, oh, no. No way. Too much fucking charisma.
People were listening to him too much.
Yeah.
Yeah, too much. Yeah.
Do you buy into that shit?
Yeah. Yeah. Remember when Martin Lawrence was running down Ventura Boulevard naked, shooting a gun, saying they trying to kill me?
Oh, yeah.
Come on, man.
Yeah, that's right, man.
Yeah.
Like, and there's all kinds of really creepy glimpses of that for a sec. I mean, you know.
The tranny that Eddie Murphy supposedly slept with was thrown off a building.
Do you know about the, okay, we'll bring it down to like Jeffrey Dahmer for a second. Cause I like, you know, the term as above, so below,
right?
Like from like things that we can see, we can extrapolate things that we can't see. So, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer, he had some dude that he had been like raping.
The black dude.
Drugging him. The guy runs.
Yeah.
The cops bring him back saying, oh, this is a lover spat. And then Jeffrey Dahmer kills the motherfucker, right? And so, like, yeah, we keep getting these weird glimpses of little moments like that. Now, I mean, if you're going to use Occam's razor, it's more likely Martin Lawrence was just high as fuck, right? Having a nervous breakdown, completely freaked out by the pressure of all that fame, loses his mind for a second, goes running down the street with a gun, right? Then it is that there's some conspiratorial network of shadowy figures who were like, listen, man, you got to do what we want or we're going to take you out. And then he goes galloping down the street.
Well, right? I don't necessarily believe that. And Jeffrey Dahmer, you know, it's crazy. The guy that did get away from him, I believe he committed suicide like a few years later on the same day that he got away from Jeffrey Dahmer.
Damn.
It was a black dude.
Damn it.
He was like a crack. Well, he turned to crack after that.
Right.
Yeah. But when it comes to the powers that be, man, like I don't, it's like this, man. It's when you get into the entertainment industry, you already know what it is. You know what I'm saying? You already know how this goes.
How?
Don't go against the grain.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? So I don't feel like it's necessarily like all that what people make it out to be. But it's like you get a job with the government. Don't go out there telling what we do or else we're going to have to take care of your ass. You know what I'm saying?
Well, there's a long history or tradition of like in magic of secrecy. That's for sure. Yeah. Like, you know, magicians, like the real magicians, like telling somebody how someone else's trick is done is like it's fucked up, right? And I think in any industry, in the upper echelons, there's like necessary secrets that might be happening. But the shit we're talking about, man, this is the idea that in like the upper echelons of Hollywood, there are dark, satanic, child abusing lunatics.
You think so?
I don't think so. This is the legend.
Oh, because I'm like, there's dark, satanic, child abusing people that work at Burger King.
There you go. That's it. Exactly.
Like, you don't think there's some sick motherfuckers in the industry, like who's getting in trouble?
That guy.
Yeah.
That demon. That motherfucking God. What's his name?
Can't think right.
He made like a million shows.
Yeah.
And there's like an old clip of Kurt Cobain's wife. What was her name?
Courtney Love.
Courtney Love. Natasha Leggero interviewing her like 5-6 years ago, and saying like, do you have any secrets in Hollywood or any advice to young actresses or something like that? And she goes, yeah, don't go to Harvey Weinstein's parties. You know, and like,
there we go.
It was like one of those like secrets that everybody knew, but no one had the guts to stop it.
Yeah, right. It, because it takes more than one. You're not going to believe one. What's his name? Corey Feldman. He was telling us about this shit.
Yeah.
For years.
Yeah.
Nobody believed him. Like, oh, he's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, like that is, like Dave Chappelle said, when you call someone crazy, that's too dismissive. How about listen to him for a little bit?
Yeah.
I will say, though, I did experience some crazy stuff. I was driving up Mulholland one day, and there was this big, handsome black guy, about 6'4". I had took a girl up there to chill, like, you know, to see the city.
Yeah.
And he came running to where we were parked, and he's like, help me, help me, they trying to kill me.
Jesus.
And I was like, who? He's like, they trying to get me, man. And then I was like, I don't know what I can do for you, bro. I ain't got no gun. And then he kept running past my car, and that made me drive off.
Okay, hang on. Have you ever heard the Coast to Coast call where they shut down Coast to Coast?
What do you mean?
Can I play something for you real quick? Yeah. Hold on, I gotta pause it. Holy shit.
I wanna know what Coast to Coast is.
Okay, hang on. Because it's audio, it's just like through this into the mic. I think it's actually, I'm not sure what's going to happen. Okay. So this is Coast to Coast, which is like an Art Bell show. It's a paranormal show.
Okay.
So he gets a call from somebody claiming to be from Area 51.
Okay.
Okay, this is that call.
Hello, Art?
Yes.
Hi. I don't have a whole lot of time.
Well, look, let's begin by finding out whether you're using this line properly or not.
Area 51.
Yeah, that's right. Were you an employee or are you now?
A former employee.
Former employee.
I was let go on a medical discharge about a week ago, and I've kind of been running across the country. I don't know where to start. They're going to... they'll triangulate on this position really, really soon.
You can't spend a lot of time on the phone, so give us something quick.
Okay, okay, what we're thinking of as aliens are, they're extra-dimensional beings that an earlier precursor of the, space program made contact with. They are not what they claim to be. They have infiltrated a lot of aspects of the military establishment, particularly the Area 51. The disasters that are coming, the government knows about them, and there's a lot of safe areas in this world that they could begin moving the population to now, Art.
But they're not doing anything.
They are not. They want the major population centers wiped out so that the few that are left will be more easily controllable.
Discharge.
I started getting...
Check this out. Goes off the air. The radio station goes down.
Wow. How old is this?
Old. This is like years. I'll look at the date. I'm not sure. This is... They had to like reboot.
They shut it down.
Yeah.
Mm. That's crazy.
In some way, something knocked us off the air, and we're on a backup system now.
It's the government, or...
I don't know.
It has to be something, though.
You know, man, you're like, okay, so you're, you know, you're running your fucking awesome, and Art Bell Show's awesome, conspiracy theory radio show.
Yeah.
You know, you just get another call from somebody, like, here's a fucking, another, this is great, but who gives a shit? It's interesting. And then all of a sudden your radio station goes offline. That's a scary moment. That's crazy. That's a scary moment.
But could it be a coincidence? Was it storming?
Well, or it could have been planned. It could have been entertainment. Right. You know, they're right. Like, let's fake it. Everyone.
It's like when they read the novel War of the Worlds on the radio, and everybody thought the world was ending.
That's right. It's powerful. It's powerful, man. But that, I mean, isn't that the problem right now in the world that we're in? Is that like every single story, Martin Lawrence, some weird shit on Art Bell, every single story has an alternate hypothesis that is the opposite of scary, you know? I mean, like, that's generally the idea, is anytime any weird shit happens, it either gets, like, signal blasted to the point that it's so distorted, whatever it is, has a million interpretations,
right,
and it gets watered down to nothing, right. Or, you know, people, seemingly logical people, are on the air dismissing it. It's like, oh, it's just nothing at all. I mean, this is, like, the War of the Worlds is a perfect example, man. Like, beehives, the queen bee releases pheromones, and those pheromones control the way the workers act,
right?
And for our hive, the pheromones come from TV.
The media,
yeah.
I just feel like if that, if the stuff that the government is quote-unquote trying to keep from us is so powerful, would it really be available on YouTube?
Well, right. That's the answer to that is, yeah. The answer is what they do. I mean, go on the CIA's website. They have a library that is filled with all the Freedom of Information Act shit that people have gotten from them. And they just put it out there. Because, I mean, I remember once I'm looking at this crazy shit about remote viewing. Mm-hmm. And it was saying, like, you know, CIA stuff. I'm like, the CIA never did this. Then I realize I'm on the CIA's website.
And they say they do it.
Well, they do it. They do, at least they've attempted to. Mm. And that's from the Freedom of Information Act stuff. So the idea is, like, actually, it's better to leave it on YouTube, to leave it out there. Because if you see it out there, you're like, it's probably nothing, right? Because why would it be out there?
Right.
You know? I don't know. To me, my question to you is, what if all that shit is true? Hollywood Illuminati, Martin Lawrence was threatened. We live in a world where reptiles are running the show. Whatever it may be, how does this change your day-to-day existence?
It doesn't.
Doesn't do anything.
Because there's, what can I do about it? Live with that controlling me? Like, oh my God, when are the aliens going to get me? I'm in the entertainment industry. When will the powers that be tell me I have to sacrifice a family member?
Right.
What if I want to?
Do you get to choose the family member?
Right, do I get to choose the family member? Because I got a couple.
How would that, what do you think that conversation would look like? Like, how does that even come up in a meeting?
How I feel about that is that if you do get to that insanity level where Kevin Hart's headed, it's, I just feel like it's with anything, like, we, in order to control you, we might have to strip you of something that's of great value to you. Maybe they say that, not telling you it's a person, you know?
Yeah.
Right. It's like when you, I mean, we're their employees. you have an employee handbook when you get hired by any job.
Listen, I don't know. I've met people who are incredibly famous. And as far as I can tell, no lizards yet. You know, like it's.
I know a lot of people that are incredibly famous as well. We probably know a lot of the same people.
Yeah.
And it's like, I know guys that are worth $100 million, $200 million. And it's like, they don't have these weird wacko stories. You know, it's entertaining to me. I will say that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'll bring it up in conversation. But do I live thinking that the powers that be are going to kidnap me one day and put me in a suburban and take me to some secluded area and make me sign a blank sheet of paper giving my soul over? Or if I don't follow this, they're going to kill one of my family members? Like, I just want to be one of the greatest comedians that have ever lived.
I think that's going to happen to you. But before, not the van, the comedian part. But thanks. But you got to admit, if you end up in a van Illuminati, that's the best day of your life.
I have fun with it.
One of the best days of your life. Like, because you, that's like, you know.
There's a few things I'm going to request.
What?
I make sure that my great-great-great-great-grandkids inherit the wealth that you may need me to comply with these rules that you have. I want to make sure I pass down generational wealth.
Okay. This is great. I'm in the van. All right. We got that. We're writing that down. Generational wealth. What else do you want?
I want to be able to retire my closest family members.
Okay. We're going to retire your closest. You mean retires in like... They don't have to work anymore.
They don't have to work anymore.
You got to be careful when you talk to us about retirement because we have different meanings for that word. Gotcha. So we're going to retire your closest family members. Okay, this is great. We just need you to fist this toddler on camera.
So we can have something over you?
That's the fucking story, though, man. It's like that. It's like it's the most ridiculous story, and I don't believe it. And by the way, you guys, sorry to make a really gross fucking child abuse joke. My apologies. I have a kid now that's fucked up. But this is what the goddamn narrative is here, right? But I've got a scarier version of it than that, than the van.
What's up?
Slow boil. A slow, slow boil. And also another scary fucking idea. Mm-hmm. When people think about this shit, the celebrity thing, the fame, the success, a lot of times
you may not know what you're getting into. I'm at a level of success right now where there's a lot of critique in everything I do. And I'm not even like fucking Dave Chappelle famous. And I'm like, damn, like you. I'm learning now to post on social media and get the fuck off. Don't try to read the comments.
Never.
You can't engage with everybody in the inbox. There's some wacko people out here, man. There's some, I won't say wacko, but there's some different people out here and they're fans of your work. And, I appreciate all my fans, but you know, when it gets to a level where it's crossing fan and celebrity, then it's like, all right, the likelihood of us hanging out is slim.
Well, listen to, you know, the dangers, I think, in this business are not Illuminati vans. If that shit's out there, Illuminati van, I'm interested. I'm not going to hurt anybody. Yeah. You know, once, though, I did get a call from DARPA. I'll tell you about that some other time.
Who's DARPA?
The Defense Department, after going on Rogan. but that's a different story. But to me, I think the danger is not so much... It's not like literal, like occult forces, but internal psychic forces. They can get really, really, really stretched in strange ways when you start getting a lot of attention.
When you start getting a lot of attention, whatever demons you have are gonna, whatever tempts you is gonna be times 100.
Right. Well, you can have it.
Right. Because if I did cocaine, shit. I'd probably be coked out right now.
Do you think you get addicted to coke?
Nah, I don't like drugs. I'm naturally high, man.
Well, what do you mean by that?
I have anxiety and depression, so I use those as kind of like my drugs. So when I'm feeling anxious or if I have a panic attack, because what happens when you do cocaine? Your heart races, you start sweating.
You just get this like, you know, like
an energy burst.
Think of like a great set. Mm-hmm. The feeling you have when you get off stage. Mm-hmm. It's that.
I get those daily from panic attacks, so I don't need a drug.
Yeah.
I'll just channel that into my high. That's what I do.
Right.
So when I have anxiety and things start getting distorted and I get, you know, the auditory and visual hallucinations. Yeah. I just pretend I'm on shrooms or something.
Okay. So you just know? Imagine, well, you are. I mean, that is the funniest thing about, you know, anxiety attacks. Depression's a little different, but is that if you follow the any kind of anxiety attack, you can watch it peak, just like a psychedelic, which Absolutely. It's a peak, and then descend, and you realize, oh, shit, my brain pharmacist wrote me a fucking shitty prescription for this crappy goddamn drug called anxiety, some amygdala release that causes all this stress.
Yeah, the medicine is worse.
What, benzos will fuck you up for sure.
I was on Paxil. Mm. And I had tranquilizers, which took my creativity for the time that I was on them. So, I mean, I like my mom's a Christian and my aunt used to be, and now she's more of a spiritual person like me. I'm a Buddhist. But a long time ago when I was a kid, people recognized something special about me. And they always told me, you know, when you have something great, there's going to be a lot of stuff that, you know, comes with that. So with me being intellectual, intelligent comes the other part, the depression, the manic episodes, yeah. the anxiety, which yeah. I all appreciate because my creativity balances it out. You mm-hmm. know, I feel like I was born to be on stage, born to create. I'm not good at anything else. I can't work a job.
When did you start stand up?
When I was like 16.
Where?
In Macon, Georgia. I used to do a lot of church shows. And then I used to go to a lot of comedy clubs.
Church shows?
Yeah, like do stand up at church.
Okay.
So I had to be.
That cool. was a thing? That's a thing?
Well, I mean, I was so young, I couldn't really get into anywhere, you know?
Was there like there are other comics on the lineup? Other
no,
kids?
No, it was just me.
So you wait. And just to say, only because you're just like saying church show, like we're all like, oh yeah, classic church comedy show.
So, you know, I had a momager.
Okay. Shit.
Yeah. So she would just talk to churches and they let me come do 15, Whoa. 20 minutes. Yeah. Get
Did you, was it Christian themed?
They would just, no, because early on I knew I wasn't a Christian. A little background about me. I'm half Cuban. So I grew up in a Catholic school with Baptist grandparents. So okay. you can only understand the confliction right
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
In
Georgia.
In Georgia, yeah. But what was I saying? Oh, yeah, I had a momager. So she would just, she's pretty popular in the area. So she would just talk to, you know, different churches. Like, you know, after the choir sings, before the preacher comes up, my son does comedy. And it wasn't necessarily like Christian comedy. It was more so just along the lines of clean comedy.
Yeah, of course.
I got jokes now about Jesus that a church would probably be ready to baptize me in holy water. Like I got this joke where I says, Jesus's mom was me too'd. She didn't ask to be pregnant.
Hold on. Oh, right. Oh, you're saying that she was raped by God.
She was me too by a nigga named Holy Spirit.
Okay. I gotcha. Yeah, yeah. That idea was like not a willing humping
right.
session.
Right.
It was like like a Cosby style. And, you know.
I mean, in all honesty, how else can you look at it?
That?
Yeah.
That she enjoyed having sex with the creator of the universe.
I don't know if it was that type of sex, but she was spiritually impregnated or however the Bible says. But I'm sure, you think she prayed to God to be impregnated without sex?
This is still, one, to me, like in Christianity, one of the glaring, weird aspects of it is that sexuality gets really swept under the rug in yeah. the weirdest fucking way.
In the Bible, most women are viewed as hoes except for Mary.
But they don't, when they're talking, like there's the, I don't know, there's some, that poem of, there's a poem that's kind of like, uses all these like fruit analogies to talk about fucking, you know, like you're, but the, what's cool about like, Hinduism, bhakti yoga, like the story of Krishna,
right.
is there's a
Amun-Ra.
I don't. Yes, are you saying there's a connection between Krishna and Amun-Ra?
Well, I mean, there's a connection between Jesus and all these people.
Right. Well, right. This is like the idea that these are just different symbolic
right.
figures that emerge in different cultures in certain ways according to the culture to transmit.
Talk about the solar system.
Deep information. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, sure.
Because like the resurrection is about how the sun went down and then on the third day it rose again. Yeah, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, because that's when you go into the spring solstice.
Right. This is the, sorry for chewing ice. This is the pagan, this is like the concept of like nature religions got transformed into Christianity or the various religions. And this is like, I think definitely what's fucking cool about this shit is it's so dense. It's so deeply encoded. It's like, it's not just that. Other interpretations of it are, it's that, it's a story of creativity. It's a story of when you've got writer's block and that's the crucifixion. And it's the story of when you're like, fuck, I'm never going to be funny again. I'm never going to write a joke again. It's depression. Right. It's when you're laying in bed completely numb and you're like, this is it. I'm done. And then the resurrection is that insane moment where all of a sudden you start turning the corner.
You write 30 jokes in a week.
It's like, what the fuck? What? Here it is.
Every comedian goes through that.
You have to. Mm-hmm. If everyone didn't go through that, then there'd be a lot more comedians.
Yeah.
Because that's what kills people is like that.
Am I even funny?
Yeah. Yeah. And no, that day you're not. You're not funny. Your brain isn't spitting out whatever the fuck it is.
I like that interpretation you said. And I often ask, I talk to my family about it, and I'm like, it's not that I'm trying to discredit Jesus. I do believe that, you know, there was possibly a great man that walked this earth, you know, as well as several other great men, you know. Was his name Jesus? That's left up to you and your faith.
Yeah.
Like I told you on the podcast, I believe there's only one mountaintop.
Right.
No matter how you get there, baby, you're going to hike, you're going to fly, you're going to take a helicopter, drive up there, walk, crawl.
Yeah.
However you choose to get there, that's how you get there. It's all about what you believe in your mental.
Right? Yeah, right. Yeah, and that's why a lot of those stories are really useful because they're meant to be maps to get up there. You know?
Like I take the story of Jonah in the well as a pregnancy or a being in prison or being imprisoned by anything. You're in the belly of a well, so it's not physically possible for you to survive in there with stomach acid and all this water that he brings in. And what was he able to light a candle and write while he was in the belly of the well?
Right? Yeah.
So it's like that can be a story of anxiety. You can be the whale.
Yeah.
You yourself, cool. You're trapped inside yourself because it's a mental belly. It's a mental cage. It's a mental jail.
Yeah.
So now you have to spend some time inside of this whale, which is you, to truly find yourself. Because he came out of the whale a better person.
That's right. He didn't want to go. Like God was sending him to some place. He was getting like the creative impulse. He was being told by God. This comes up again and again. Go there. And he's like, I don't want to go there. And he ended up on a ship going the opposite direction. And then the ship hit high water. And
this is how do you look at God? I look at God as me and everything around me. You're God, you know?
Yeah. Well, the moment you just look at God as you and not everybody around you, you become the biggest asshole on planet Earth. Like that is...
Yeah, I'm not saying that I'm just God.
No,
I'm
know.
When I look in the mirror, I see God. When I look at you, I see God.
I love that.
When I look at trees and leaves, I see God. It's an expression of everything. I look at God more so as a verb than a noun. It's an expression.
Sure. Well, it's an outflow of sorts. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of thing that's right now.
Absolutely.
I think God is as a term of convenience. So if I need to like make a connection to the sum total of all things, I'm going to use the term God, and that's how I pray.
I pray before I go on stage.
Oh, you do?
I'd say.
Do you say the same prayer?
Pretty much. I thank God for my creativity. I thank him for the gift of laughter. I thank him for the gift of expression.
Wow.
And I thank him for the gift of control, because when we're on stage, we're in control.
Yeah.
If you know how to control the audience, it doesn't really matter what you're saying. They're going to enjoy you.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's beautiful.
You see some comics talk for 6 minutes without a punchline, and the audience is just so engaged with them.
Oh, yeah. I love that. Me I too. Love that when that happens.
I'm learning to be more conversational on stage. And, it's all within the growing. This is the growing of me, because I'm in a weird place with my comedy now where it's like I know what I'm doing, but I don't really know what I'm doing. And I know this is not the final stage of where I'm going to be as a comedic expression. I look at myself as a comedic expression, you know.
You know, well, man, the way when I realized I wanted to have you on the podcast was at Kill Tony. And my wife and I just stumbled into the main room for some reason. We'd been out partying. I think we were a little drunk. And we were like sitting back there just enjoying the show. And then you came out. I had met you, but I hadn't seen you perform yet. You came out and what was the guy's name?
Adam Ray.
Sweet guy sitting there. You got him confused. Okay, so I'll just let you tell the story, because basically, wait, before you tell the story, I just want to say I saw you come out and just begin to lay into Adam Ray in the funniest, most brutal, like, yeah, really, really, like, graceful way. Mm-hmm. And you were like, because, you know, if you're going to do that kind of shit,
you got to know the balance.
And you can, yeah, because you can, that's the best way to alienate an audience is to seem like a bully.
Right.
So if you can kind of like meter it out in a certain way where there's like compassion or love behind it, the audience will stay with you and the person you're roasting will not get pissed off or shouldn't. Anyway, Adam Ray handled it great. Now tell the story about why you started attacking him, because he wasn't fighting back.
Yeah, so Adam Ray is not a roaster. I later found out. Well, he later talked to me after that, and he was like, I wanted to roast back, but I didn't want the audience to hate me. And I was like, bro, anything that comes out of your mouth, because right now they look at me as Mike Tyson.
Right.
So when you're a great fighter or whatever you are, people are waiting for your downfall, or right, they're waiting for somebody to at least get a good hit on you.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, anything. I told him anything you say out of your mouth is going to hit.
Yeah.
Because it's like I've just been knocking people out. And when someone finally at least connects with a halfway decent joke, it's the audience is going to love it.
Yeah.
So the problem was I'm just now getting into mainstream comedy within the last, I'd say, like, well, I've been into mainstream comedy, but I'm just oblivious to talent. To not necessarily talent, but to the comedians.
Right.
I don't know names. I don't know faces.
Yeah.
And I'm getting better now, sure, you know, especially being at the store a lot and getting up more. So I thought Adam Ray was Andrew Schultz.
Okay.
And everybody was warning me, like, when Andrew Schultz is sure, home, he's going to rip your ass up.
Right.
So I'm like, all right, I know how to handle this. You know, like when you're fighting, you throw a jab out. Let's see what this fighter is about. Let me throw this jab out. Boom. All right. Let's see if he hit me with a hook. So I kept, you know, jabbing and throwing a hook, and I'm like, damn, he ain't biting.
Yeah.
He ain't even ducking. He just
That's what was so astounding about it. That's why we were all spellbound, because it was like it was watching like a bear attack somebody who was, you know what I mean? That thing when people just limp up and the thing's just thrashing them. And then somehow people didn't think you're a bully. He, by the way, I'm not trying to paint
that's
him.
That's because when I roast, I do visual jokes. So I don't do like any hurtful, like you got to know someone's past, like Adam yeah. Ray, remember when you killed that girl having a right. DUI? Well, I do jokes that are visual. So it's like whatever I say, you can see it. So right. he looked tired. So I was playing like, did you just wake up out of a coma? Like, why do you look, why do you look so damn tired? So it's like, it's a fun, you know, it's
but you got to understand, y'all, this guy, it's like you're on a show just having a fun night.
Right.
And suddenly someone just out of the blue is just raining fire on you because he thinks you're somebody else.
Hilarious.
It was funny. And he handled it. Adam Ray handled great. But anyway, man, that's when I was like, holy shit. Wow, that's a funny guy, man.
We cool now.
You're yeah. funny. Yeah.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
Yeah, and that, like, so I'm like, fuck, I want to talk to you about it, because, you know, a lot of times I have comics on who've been out here a little bit longer and stuff, but it is interesting to me to watch you is you like really begin to experience the kind of heat you're getting right now. And this feeling of getting, and I don't just mean heat, like accolades or like people saying you're funny or opportunities you're probably getting. I'm talking about that thing when you really start getting your rhythm, when it really starts happening.
That's happening now.
That's exhilarating, isn't it?
And I don't know if this sounds weird or if it sounds, what's the word I'm looking for? Arrogant. But I don't think it's arrogant, but it's like everything that's happening and that will happen, I've already saw it.
Like manifesting it.
Yeah.
So you're a manifester.
But I mean, also, bro, I know this is going to sound weird and I'm real big on energy, but every single big moment I've had in life, I've dreamt about it. And I'm talking about like a real visual audio dream, and then I'll experience it. And I'm like, oh man, I remember this. And I'll smile on the inside.
Wow.
Yeah.
So which came first, the chicken or the egg? Did the dream create the reality, or do you think you're experiencing some kind of like prophetic vision?
I do believe that I have visions. Like with anything I do in life, I pretty much like meditate on it and I need to see it. And sometimes I'll just meditate on my future and I'll see it, see things that are happening. There's people you can ask that have came back to me and told me, like, you remember 2 years ago when you said you were going to be a door guy and it happened now? And I'm like, yeah, bro, like anything I tell you, you can write a check for it.
So what's your, why does it work like that? What do you think that is?
You know, like when you buy a, if you go buy a Mercedes-Benz E350 red, you never saw one before. And now that you bought it, you see a whole bunch.
Yes.
Because you're now focused on that.
Right.
So when you're focused on the positive, you start seeing positive. I have, my negative thoughts are probably positive 9 to 1, you know? So I might, for every 9 positive thoughts I have, I might have 1 negative.
Right.
And it normally involves like the death of a family member that I'm close to. I don't know. I'm a weird person and I think about weird shit or,
seems not weird to think about that. It's scary.
Yeah. So, so, you know, every time I have a negative thought, because, you know, a negative thought can throw off a year because it starts as 1 negative thought.
Right.
And that's a negative day. Then that negative day turns into a negative week.
Yeah.
Then that negative week turns into a negative month. And that negative month turns into a negative year.
Yeah.
And that negative year can turn into a negative decade.
And that could turn into a hell.
Right. So it's like I don't give a fuck if I go outside and my car is on fire right now. You know, all right, man. All right, Duncan, this is an insurance matter. I'm going to just take a lift home, all right?
Yeah.
I'm like, damn, why bad shit always got to happen to me?
Why
fuck shit always got to happen to me? I'm not that person. It's like, whatever, man. You know, roll with the punches that life gives you. It's not that serious.
No.
At the end of the day, as long as I, you know, got my family members in the same mind, I'm cool.
Yeah, that. I love thinking about this stuff, man. Yeah. I've gotten into some, you know, authors who talk about it. Neville Goddard.
I'm reading a lot of Neil deGrasse Tyson now.
Okay.
Yeah,
but he's like, that's not a manifester. He's like more of a skeptical Carl Sagan, right? Like,
he breaks things down. Like, I'm reading Astrophysics for People in a Hurry. So when you start learning, like, how minute these problems that we say we have are compared to the vast creation and how long it took for a fucking planet to be created and life to be able to be sustained on Earth.
Yeah.
Then you'll realize like the shit I'm worrying about is bullshit.
Right.
I'm a fucking proton compared to this whole thing called life.
I'm this whole thing called life that thinks it's a proton.
Right.
And yeah. And that's to, you know, that being hyper compressed into an identity for a massive universe. This is like someone who just passed away. One of my teachers, Ram Dass, said, dying is like taking off a shoe that's too tight. And, you know, being a human being seems to be akin to being everything with a blindfold of the universe wrapped around it. And that's the day-to-day existence.
Absolutely.
And okay, but to get back into the manifestation stuff, man, that is one part of it, which is at least Neville Goddard talks about like the steps to start manifesting. And the first step is I am, you know, I am. So that's the first step is like experience the vast nature of everything. And then in that you can start manifesting stuff.
You never, one piece of advice, if you know any younger comics are listening to this, is I see a lot of younger comics that I'm so upset with, you know, and it's not that they're not doing everything that they need to be as far as comedy is involved, but it's like y'all are lazy as fuck when it comes to working. Comics don't want to work because they feel like they'll miss an opportunity. But if you get a daytime job, comedy doesn't start until 5:36.
Right.
How can you be focused on being funny if you have no security in where you're going to stay or how you're going to eat?
Yeah.
I've always been a hustler. I get it, man. You know, and that's maybe why I was able to, you know, elevate maybe quicker than some other people who have been out here the same amount of time as me, because it's like, if I'm hanging with you, Joe Rogan, Jeff Ross, and y'all say, let's go eat at Crustaceans, I'm like, bet. I'm not like, oh, I can't go. Because you don't know what that opportunity is going to turn into.
Right.
Joe Rogan might like my personality and hear me talking to you, and now here I am on JRE.
Right.
Now my life has been transformed, and people now all of a sudden see this asteroid coming, and they're like, why didn't we see that coming before?
Yeah, man.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, sure. I mean, that's if, like... Sometimes I like Rogan saw me when I was doing like a long time ago, man. And like he saw me in the OR. He liked some joke I did. I got off stage. He like gave me a big hug and like was like, that was really funny. And it was like that just alone was like, holy fucking shit. That's so cool. But then he started taking me on the road. And then that led to everything for me.
Absolutely.
But if I had canceled that spot, who the fuck knows what would have happened?
Yeah.
You know, you do need to like, as much as possible, be out there.
You know, I have a funny story about Kill Tony. And I told my buddy, I'm like, bro, I'm going to, as soon as I get richer, I'm going to give you like 20K. So I had like a month period where I was kind of like, F the Comedy Store, F Kill Tony. I've been going there for 5 months straight, and I've only gotten up once.
Yeah.
So my friend came into town from Atlanta. He's like, hey, bro, I want to go sign up for Potluck and Kill Tony. I'm like, man, I ain't really trying to do that. He's like, man, come on, man. Come with me, dog. I was like, all right, bro, pick me up and I'll come, because I'm definitely not driving to the fucking Comedy Store and paying $10 for parking.
Yeah.
And I'm going to want to grab a drink and, you know, be out of 30 bucks or whatever to just be kicking it, yeah, you know. So that night we went, I got pulled and he didn't get pulled. And that was the start of me being a regular on Kill Tony.
Right. Yeah.
The time that I didn't want to go.
Yeah. 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 That's it. I mean, it's I think about all the, we'll never know, but I just think about all the nights if I'd gone out, who the fuck knows what would have happened?
Carpe diem, seize the opportunity, seize the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. But as you know, the problem is, as a comic, one of the common things that you do here is depression, man. You said it here.
Yeah.
And depression doesn't want you to do anything.
To do shit.
Yeah. It wants you to stay inside.
And Uber Eats.
Uber
Eats make it so easy to be depressed. Because you don't even got to leave your house to fucking...
It is like something a depressed person manifested.
Yeah.
It's like for sure something a depressed person.
I don't want to leave my house, but I still want to be able to eat like a fucking pig.
It's like one step away from food tubes, man. Like actually, like the way we get cable, just tubes that come out of the wall of your bed that you can just open your mouth and sprays protein in. It's almost that.
I'm surprised we don't have a pill yet that we can. I was just talking about this earlier. I'm like, why don't we have a fucking pill that we can eat once for breakfast that can expand in our stomach and it just gives us all of our nutrients and we're good?
Yeah, that would be incredible and horrible at the same time.
I'm a large guy, but I've gotten way healthier within like the last 3-4 months. And like, I have to eat more now to lose weight. My trainer's like, you have to eat more. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, because I write on everything. He's like, you don't eat enough.
Isn't that weird?
Your body's holding on to the fat because you're not eating enough calories.
So fucked up. It's the craziest shit when to like realize that like every single thing you're doing or that you think is the right way to do shit is not it at all.
So now I bought a whole bunch of low carb protein bars. Mm-hmm. So when I don't feel like eating, I'll just eat one of those with a bottle of water, and at least it keeps your, because you know, metabolism like a fire. You need to constantly be throwing logs on it to keep that fire burning.
Yeah.
So now I'm eating these protein bars, you know, to help. In between the times I don't eat and my body's just holding on to all these calories.
Yeah. So that's one of your, that's like what you're trying to do. You're trying to lose some weight now. You feel you're manifesting some kind of God knows what future for yourself right now. Part of that is you're trying to like trim down a little bit.
Yep. So I can be here to enjoy it. Be here a long time. You know, one of my favorite comics is Patrice O'Neill, and he died at like 41.
Diabetes, right? Is it diabetes?
Yeah. Stroke, diabetes. Well, stroke from having diabetes.
It's really weird how comedy is a dangerous profession.
Because we live fucked up. You're out 5-6 nights a week drinking and smoking weed all night long. Probably 2 o'clock in the morning going to eat some fucking steak, eggs, and potatoes at your local Norm's or some shit. So it's, I don't do that. But I used to, you know, go out every night, drink like hell. I don't smoke weed. But it's like, man, you know, you're not treating your body right. And then are you waking up and going to the gym?
Also the anxiety, man. It's also the anxiety. It's not a, you know, a regular job. I can remember when I stopped working at the Comedy Store. That was my last regular job. And I remember when that last check from the Comedy Store went into the ATM machine.
How did it feel?
Felt scary, dude, because I've been getting these checks for my whole, you know, I'd always had a job. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, that's it. That rectangle is it as far as like what you know is coming down the pipe.
But you made it work, right?
It took me a long time, man, because I was like, no, I made it work eventually, but it was a bumpy ride for me for a while, which I deserved. I wasn't working hard. I wasn't like diligently focusing, but it did work eventually.
And it gave you character.
Yeah, it did. It gave me character and it made me have a lot of respect for young comics too. Cause it's like that fucking fire you have to do a thing that is like probably going to alienate you from your family. It's probably going to alienate you from your relationship.
They're going to look at you like you're crazy.
Yeah, man.
Relationships. Oh, that is... Comics, get ready for a lot of temporary situations with women or men or whatever you're into.
Yeah, man.
Because they do not understand that shit.
Well, no. I mean, but also you're gone. Like, you're gone a lot. You know, you're gone at night. You're like... Anytime you say something funny, you stop and write it down. It's fucking annoying. It's like, are you even listening to me?
Right.
Then all the other shit, man. You know, you're dealing with like industry stuff and weird business stuff. And it's just weird. If you're failing, it's weird. If you start succeeding, they could get threatened a little bit by what's happening and worry you're going to be swept up in some fame vortex and end up leaving them. You know,
I will say this. A lot of my friends from high school think I'm rich, and I'm glad that they are exposing themselves before I actually become rich.
What do you mean? They're asking for money?
Yeah.
Already you're getting people asking you for money?
For like the last past 2 years. Yeah.
Are you fucking kidding?
Probably like 100 people. And it's like, this is why when people get famous, they don't fuck with the people that they grew up with anymore, because they look at them like an ATM.
Dude, that's so dark, man. I can't, that's fucking crazy.
A dude I went to high school with asked me, could I pay his rent? And he didn't know when he'd be able to pay me back, but he said, I'm sure you won't need it.
What?
I'm like, bro, I got a kid, man. What do you mean? I was like, all right. So anybody that wants to, this is my thing, all right? And you can use this too. If you need, you know, I say between $5 to $100, I'll just give it to you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at a point where I can afford to lose $100. I'll fuck off $100 anyway. Maybe 200.
Great.
Depending on the person you are, maybe 300, you know. So if you need something like 5, 6, 7, I say, all right, this is what I'm going to do for you. I'm going to call my daughter and put her on three-way and ask her for $500. Ask her, can her daddy give you $500?
Mm, right.
Because this is who you're going to be taking money from, my daughter.
Yeah, you got to think about your kid.
Right. So ask her. You want to do that?
How are you doing that, though, man? How are you balancing stand-up comedy with being a dad?
Well, I'm a part-time daddy. Like my baby mama called me, I'm a part-time daddy. My daughter doesn't live with me.
Is she in L.A.?
They live right outside of L.A. in Rancho Cucamonga.
How often do you see her?
A lot. I FaceTime her damn near every day. And when I'm not on the road or busy, I'll get her. So even if that's once a week, you know, however she wants me to get her. My baby mama's pretty loose with the visitation, so it's more so like... and, you know, in a couple of years, I'll have enough money to put her in private school. And I'm going to put her in a private school in between, like, here and where her mom lives so that I can pick her up from school more.
You're not stressed out by having a kid?
No. I love it. She keeps me grounded. She's so funny, and she makes it all worth it.
What's her name?
Yuri, Y-U-R-I.
Cool.
It's a Russian male name for earth worker.
Man, it's to me like having a baby has been definitely the greatest thing that ever happened to me, but dear God.
But your kid also stays with you, so it's...
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Oh, I try to spend as much time with him as I can, you know, when I'm
one, not... right?
What?
One.
He's one.
Yeah. Best age. That's the... my daughter's... Oh, she's a fucking little human. We were driving couple of days ago, and she didn't do like she normally does and say, "Hey, daddy." She reached up, she's in a booster seat, she's pretty tall. She reached up and she tapped me on the shoulder, and she's like, "Dad, can I ask you a question?" I think my daughter has like is a replica of me. She's like, "Can I ask you a question?" I'm like, "Yeah, baby." She's five. She's like, "What do you do when you think too much?"
What did you say?
I said, "What are you thinking about?" She's like, "Just everything."
Wow.
She said, "I think about the trees, I think about grandma, I think about birds, I think about you, I think about mommy." And I said, "That's not a bad thing. Do you feel good when you think about these things?" And she's like, "Yeah." I was like, "Do you think about scary things?" She's like, sometimes I have bad nightmares and it wakes me up." I was like, "When you have those bad nightmares, just think about the great things, like the trees and things like that." And ever since she was one... people might think this is weird or they might think it's genius. I've never allowed her to use coloring books. I've always gave her blank sheets of paper and allowed her to color on her own because I don't want her to get used to staying in boundaries.
Cool.
So from one, you know, when she started expressing that she wanted to be creative, I just would get like a big ass, go to like the art supply store, get those big ass sheets of construction paper. Yeah. And let her do her thing for hours.
Oh, that's cool. That's great.
Yeah.
It's fascinating, man, watching this little baby begin to take on a personality. Yep. And like we take him to these music classes and seeing all the different types of kids,
yeah,
all the different souls in those bodies, you know?
You could tell if your kid's going to be stupid by one. You can.
I don't know, really?
Yeah.
No, you can't. Well, I mean, maybe I am stupid. I remember one of my favorite things my dad used to say is he would, especially if he's like meeting a new girlfriend, he'd be like, "We used to think Duncan was retarded." He just says, he's like,
"Where are you from again?"
I'm from North Carolina, but I was born in Georgia.
What part?
St. Simon's.
Oh, you born in a nice area.
Well, yeah, for a little bit. But
right
then
by Savannah.
We left that nice area because my grandparents were well-to-do, but then like my mom married my lunatic, wonderful, you know, hilarious alcoholic PTSD father who took us on a fucking Uncle Toad's wild ride through the country, which is pretty great. But, and I'm glad it happened, definitely gave me some, definitely like, I don't know what would have happened if I'd stayed in St. Simon's Island.
Yeah, but people like us, bro, and people from that area, they're always going to think we're different. My family thought I was crazy as hell when I said I'm moving to L.A.
Oh, yeah. Right. Because I bet they did, man.
The first thing my mom said, because, you know, I was in theater and stuff, and I guess she thought it was just a phase that would pass.
Yeah.
And
same.
When I was a teenager and I had finished high school and I did 1 year of college and I was like, I'm moving to L.A., she's like, "For what?" I would like to be an actor and a comedian.
Yeah.
And she's like, "You're going to have to be gay." I'm like, "What?" Black mom we're talking about right here. "You're going to have to be gay."
What?
Oh, she was pissed about that shit.
What?
Bro. She threatened me with so much shit.
What? Why did she think that?
I'm her only child. She didn't want me to leave. Numerous amounts of reasons, you know.
But she was a momager. Like, she's the one who planted the seed. She's taking you to these churches. Why would she?
Yeah, as long as I stayed there, it probably was fine. But, you know, going to L.A.
And she just didn't expect that all of a sudden.
That's what she probably thought it was something that was just going to pass. Like, phase, you know, it's a phase. Like,
no. It's not gonna pass.
It's a lifetime commitment, Felicia. It's
never going away. It's, and I, you know, I can remember that moment in particular, when I realized it's never gonna pass. Mm-hmm. Which I think is another critical aspect of it. It's like, if you think it's gonna pass yourself, or if you're just like, I don't even know if this shit keeps, if I'm gonna keep doing this, forget it. It's a fatalistic impulse to some degree. Do you know what I'm talking about? Yeah. It's a kind of like, I'm just going to keep doing this. And, you know, people like Ari, I always think of him.
Shafir?
Yeah. I always think, like, if there was a nuclear attack, as soon as we were able to, like, climb out of the rubble, I could see him starting to do comedy shows, you know? Like, you know what I mean? And you too. It wouldn't be that long before we would figure out a way to start doing at least some kind of like once a month event in non-radioactive areas, you know. But, and to me, that's the, that was like what I learned from Mitzi. And that's what she, just,
I'm scared to hang around that dude.
Who? Ari? Why?
After he fucking, mollied Bert Kreischer.
What?
Yeah.
Hold on. Ari dosed Bert Kreischer?
Why they were doing a podcast?
What?
Yes.
When was this?
Not too long ago.
This is public knowledge?
Google it.
Hold on. Are you fucking... Ari, what are you doing? That's fucked up, man. You, what? Like, if you... That's considered attempted murder, you know?
Well, so this was in October.
Yes.
The time Ari spiked Burt's drink with Molly.
I bet it's not true. I bet
that is true.
He really did it.
Yes. Burt, yes. And Burt's wife and kid were there. That's on JRE, bro. You got to watch that. I'm scared of that dude, man. I don't want to be
just
fucking
Molly. Just cover your drinks around him.
Yeah, I won't drink around him.
Yeah, man. Ari, that's great. That's like a new level of Ari chaos. Like, I've seen him do, like, insane shit.
He came out naked on Kill Tony. I was like, this guy is not right.
Well, coming out naked, that's kind of on par for the course. Like, I could see him doing that. I'm not going to blink at that, but I don't know when he started poisoning people's
poisoning?
Fucking...
Poisoning?
He's a poisoner. Like, when did that start happening?
Yeah, I'm scared of him.
That's fucking... Because you know why you should be scared. Ari, by the way, this is crazy. We got to talk, man. That's fucking crazy.
If that shit happened to me, I'd probably be out of comedy because of what I would do afterwards.
You don't know. I mean, the problem is, like... First of all...
No, I'm saying my retaliation would
be... Oh, you would... What would you do back?
There's a lot of stuff. I'm like, if that ever happens to me, man, I probably would be in prison.
Well, yeah. You know, the whole dosing people... You know, like, one of the... I remember before I knew anything about Joey Diaz. Now that I know him, I know if he gives you weed or any kind of drug, you have to cut it into fourths. And take a fourth of it. And that's going to be way too much for you. Because he's going to give you his dose. Not your dose. He's going to give you a Joey Diaz. Like what he takes. You know what I mean? Which is a lifetime of eating marijuana. Like once I was at the UFC with Joey Diaz. And I look over. He's unwrapped some kind of foil thing. It was like weed. I've never seen this kind of weed before. Then he like, it's like, it looks like a Tootsie Roll. He looks up at me and he breaks it and like black fluid starts running out of it. And he goes, look at it. It's bleeding. Then he just fucking eats it, man. And like, you know, I've seen him eat mushrooms like popcorn. I've seen him reach into like, this is not hyperbole, man. Like, literally, like, with the way a person casually eats, like, popcorn. I've seen that happen. So, and, you know, I can remember once Joey Diaz gave me some weed. Mm. And I took it. And I remember he got this twinkle in his eye when I ate it. And I got in my fucking car. I'm driving in rush hour traffic. the sun is setting. I'm start just thinking like, oh, it's the end of the world. Like, it's definitely the end of the world. No question about it. This is the apocalypse. I am considering running to getting out of my car on the interstate because it's not moving and ordering a hamburger at a McDonald's to get back to my car. You know, I'm not going to, it's the thing that's kind of teetering on right. in my mind. And like, I got home and right when I lay down and went to the fetal position, Diaz calls and I'm like, hello. And he's like, welcome to my house, motherfucker. Hangs up. That was.
Send you to a panic attack.
Well, man, he just knew that by the time I got home, I would be shitting fucking bricks with what he gave me.
It was an edible?
It was an edible. Now I know. Now I know to quarter the shit up, but give me somebody Molly is insane, man. That's madness.
My tolerance is so low, I'd probably be so fucked up from any of that shit.
Well, yeah, you don't need to be taking that stuff.
No, I don't fuck with it. I don't do that.
It's not your thing. I mean, you got to listen to that. By the way, there's a lot of people who have that in them and they feel like they're like not exciting because they don't do psychedelics.
If your body say don't do it, don't do it.
Don't do it. Yeah, definitely don't do it, man.
I like the way my brain operates right now.
Yeah. Well, I know a lot of people are afraid of that. You know, they're desperately afraid that they're going to fuck their brain up, that there's going to be some moment where the whole thing just collapses and they go crazy from this drug or that drug, you know, but you know, that could happen without drugs anyway.
Yeah.
It just happens sometimes.
It can happen with alcohol.
It can happen with oxygen. It just can happen where like,
oh, did you hear that one conspiracy theorist, theory, not conspiracy theorist, one conspiracy theory. Let me see if I can get it right. That, we're living in like, so when we're awake is really when we're dreaming, the oxygen is poisoning us and everything what? That we see is an illusion and our dreams are really real.
Oh, like our dreams are like kind of like waking up for a second and then we're all fucked up.
Like this right now, according to that theory, would be fake.
Well, yeah, that sounds like, you know, that sounds like Tibetan dream yoga is what, you know, Tibetan dream yoga is... It's the idea that this is a dream. So basically like you, and it's not an intellectual thing, you know, where like you can think, yeah, I can kind of see how this is like a dream. The idea is that you have to begin to study the moment enough to realize that how dreamlike this experience is, you know, that this experience is like a dream. Shit happens so quickly in a life, you know, like in a dream, 1 second you're in a barrel
right.
floating down a river of blood. The next second you're like talking to your grandmother in a field or something. And like if you really look at your life, this is how our lives are.
Right.
You know, you were just in front of a church doing like clean jokes, you know?
True.
Now you're in LA, you know, pretty soon you're going to be in a fucking van signing satanic documents.
Can't wait.
Yeah. But this
with blood.
Yeah. 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 With blood. But the idea is like, you can control it. That's what manifesting is. It's like, because this is a dream and because it's no different from a dream in the same way that if you're in a dream and realize you're dreaming, what's the first thing you do?
When you're dreaming?
Have you ever had a lucid dream?
Define lucid dream for me.
Where you realize you're in a dream. Like, suddenly you look around, you're like, fuck, this is a dream. I'm dreaming.
Yeah.
So what's the first thing you do when that happens?
Wake up.
You wake up.
Yeah.
I try to fly or fuck. That's usually what I do. I definitely don't wake up. I'm like, I'll either try to like levitate or fly or manifest sex. And those are my two.
I can control my dreams.
How do you do it?
Think really hard on what I want to dream about before I go to sleep. Like kind of like meditate into a sleep.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that's the idea, but except you just transfer that into right now, which it sounds like you're already doing to some degree.
Nicotine patches cause crazy dreams.
Do they really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I haven't. Do you? Oh, yeah, you're hooked. You're hooked on that fucking vape.
Yeah.
Do you do nicotine patches too?
No, but Red Band was telling me. And so his chick took one, a half of one. To see if it would give her crazy dreams, and it gave her crazy dreams.
Yeah, I remember Red Band talking about that. You got to watch out with Red Band. Red Band went online and convinced people that, like, the stuff that cleans poodle tears gets you high.
Pool of tears.
Yeah, well, you know, like dogs get that weird runny shit. He like can angel eyes. It was some dog drop called Angel Eyes, and he convinced people that it gets you high. So he had like people like smoking Angel Eyes. Don't listen to Red Band about nicotine patches.
Red Band, you're a maniac.
He is a maniac,
motherfucker.
David, I think it's been about an hour, man. Yeah. And the baby's screaming. So let me look at the time here.
It's been about an hour and some change.
My friend, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's absolutely nice chatting with you. Hey, manifest some shit for me before you announce your dates.
I got you, buddy.
Thank you.
So what do we have for Duncan? Me and Duncan shall work close this year on something together. If not this year, it'll be at the top of next year. Just wait until you see it. Me and Duncan will go hiking this year and meditate at the top of an elevation somewhere in LA or the surrounding areas. We will probably have about 5 cookouts this summer together. I'll season the chicken. As him being white, he doesn't believe in seasoning.
So, oh, I am offended.
So I'll make sure I season the food before I bring it to his house. All these great things. And this year I can see Duncan gathering a 6-figure check off of one project. Y'all watch this. You can follow me at David Lucas Funny on Instagram, David Lucas on Facebook, Brothers in Cursive Podcast. I'm at the Atlanta Punchline with Eric Griffin January 23rd through the 25th at the Atlanta Punchline with Eric Griffin. We have 6 shows. There's 6 opportunities to see me, and Eric Griffin is one funny motherfucker.
Those are great shows, man.
Yeah, man. Thanks so much for having me on your podcast and inviting me into your world and your space.
You got it, man.
Yeah.
It's great hanging out with you, and absolutely, I hope you'll come back on again.
Sure will.
Hare Krishna. Thank you. Much thanks to David Lucas for appearing on the DTFH, and much thanks to Books and Squarespace for sponsoring this episode. If you want to find David Lucas, if you want the offer codes to Books and Squarespace, it's all going to be at DuncanTrussell.com. Also, thanks to those of you who continue to use our Amazon portal. And most importantly, thank you to all of you who take that extra step and subscribe to the DTFH on whatever your particular podcast listening device is. We'll be back next week. Until then, find the others. And if you're in the Argentum Astrum and I said too much or too little or messed up talking about y'all, please forgive me. You sound awesome. Let me in. Hare Krishna. Until next time, I'll see you around.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Career changers, including veterans and active duty service members, your transition starts here. Go from GI to IT in a matter of months. Become a certified cyber warrior with training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, offering IT pros great opportunities and a rewarding lifestyle while protecting our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. Deploy your career in IT today. Learn more at mycomputercareer.edu/CWP. SkillBridge and other VA benefits are available to those who qualify.